One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello again, my friends, and thank you for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives. I always say I'm going to change it up, and I guess I'm going to. You know who we are. This is family. This isn't one of those things where we get... I hate saying my own name, Philly. I hate, like, introducing myself. When I come to somebody's house, like when I come to your house, I don't go, hey, Kyle Filson, it's me again, Cam Hale.
Yeah, but you got to remember there's lots of people that are tuning in for the very first time.
They don't know who you are. They know, and it's just one of those things. And even if you don't, they're not tuning in to hear my name. They're tuning in to hear what we're talking about.
That's true.
It doesn't care. So, folks, y'all know who it is. We know how this thing goes. We're all friends and family here. Thank you for joining us here today. We are going to have a great time. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Hope everybody got a little sunlight. I know we've got to see the sunlight down here in Texas. Thank you for everybody that's sending us messages
emails. Today the sun is out all day long.
Exactly.
These storms are out of here. Look, I like the rain as much as the next person, but it was getting ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and everybody, look, we're doing great. Thank you so much for checking on us. We've had a few flash floodings, you know, of course, trees down, things like that around here. It seems to be really hammering further south, like down around Wimberley. There's several people have lost their lives and all that, and it's a terrible thing. But the flash flooding, it really is. This is like the wettest May since recorded history, I believe, the state of Texas has ever had. And now it's over 17 inches just this month. So that's pretty interesting. So everywhere you walk is a swamp, but now it makes it easier to find tracks of the big feats and all the strangeness. But before we get into any of that stuff, me and Kyle was talking a little bit off air. Kyle's got a story that got his dander up. If he has dander, I don't know, his pet dander. But he got his dander up, Kyle, because we were talking about DARPA. Why don't you explain what we have found?
Did you see this? We always talk about it from time to time. And several fans have sent us this link, too. And so thank you to everybody that did that. It's about MIT's new robot cheetah. Well, we've talked about this robot cheetah before, and I'm sure a lot of people are aware of it. But now they've designed it to where now it can jump obstacles while running.
You see, this is the next step.
Right.
Now I want a robotic horse.
Well, this is like a horse, but just smaller.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. Now, this was from Motherboard, and it was written by Becky Ferreira. But, you know, everybody knows about how cheetahs are like one of the fastest animals on Earth, and that, you know, they're incredible. They have incredible agility and quick reflexes and things like that. But now they've been able to do this and incorporate this into robotics. Now, since 2009, the teams based in Massachusetts Institute of Technology have been working on creating a mechanical cheetah. Now, the team's latest video showcases the robot cheetah's complex hurdle jumping abilities and its adorably stilted gait. Now, for your information, the slow motion money shot started about 1:17 on the YouTube video, and I'll put links to this video on the website. Now, most robots, they say, you know, that you see are sluggish and very heavy, and thus they cannot control the force when they're moving at a very high speed. But this new one, that's the difference. This Sang-bi Kim, who's the director of MIT's biomimetics lab, says that that's what makes this MIT cheetah so special. You can actually control the force profile for a very short period of time, followed by a hefty impact with the ground, which makes it more stable, it makes it more agile, and it makes the thing more dynamic. Now, the robot's hurdling dexterity is very impressive. And they've said they still have a long way to go, but, you know, this is the first step. But they eventually hope to be able to build a model that's capable of not only galloping, but being able to jump obstacles while galloping up to 30 miles an hour.
It's already built. They're just not showing
exactly.
Us.
Well, you know, and that's half as fast as a real live cheetah.
Yeah.
So if this mechanical thing can run at 30 miles an hour, human beings can't run that fast.
Well, especially not for the length of it, because they're not talking about just it's because the ones that we've reported on in the past were all tethered to get their energy. So they're working on things to allow them to have an energy pack, not just like a DeWalt battery where you cram it on the butt end of that thing and it takes off running. They're working on getting it to where it's totally untethered, where it can actually sprint the whole thing. I mean, that's getting
it's
a little
terrifying,
scary.
Right?
It's look, I see a lot of good with it, like we always say.
I don't see any good out of it. What good can come from a robot cheetah?
Nepal. You imagine where they can go through that things with the earthquake in Nepal while they're searching for people. You can put things on them and let them go.
Yeah,
they go. And there's a lot of ways that you could use them in a good way. Not that they're going to be used in a good way, but I could just see that there's a lot of ways you could.
Now, you see the things in the video that's like running on a treadmill, and they're putting like what looks like sofa cushions or something on the treadmill, and as it gets to the cheetah, it jumps over it, you know, trying to trip it up.
Yeah.
So they're not doing it. They're doing it randomly. So it's able to detect it, calculate how high it can jump, and do all that in a nanosecond. You know, my thing is, how long until they develop where the thing can jump more than that? Like, it could jump, like, maybe 12 feet in the air.
Oh, it's coming, I'm sure.
Right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it can run, jump up on the roof of your house, then off to the next roof. I mean,
yeah.
It's going to be like Spider-Man going from roof to roof.
Just leaping across
things. Robotic things with miniguns attached to them, lasers. I mean,
well, you know, if they got cars that can register, you know, how close you're getting to another car and automatically apply the brakes.
Yeah, like the Google car.
Exactly. Then you know they can stick it in a robot.
You know that,
so
like,
it's coming.
Four of those Google cars actually had wrecks.
Well, I heard that they got bad gas, that they were drunk on gas, is what I heard.
I heard that the wrecks are actually caused by human intervention, or another person actually ran into it.
Oh, really?
So it's not really.
I got you.
It's a misleading title.
Well, now that you bring up the fact that we were talking about this old DARPA deal, I'm gonna add on to that, Kyle. I found something that you're gonna really enjoy here. Now, this comes from Live Science.
Do I need to key the Terminator music?
It's something that's that bad. It goes right along hand in hand with this DARPA cheetah. We were talking about. I could see it, and like I said, I could see it being for good. But this is bad. This is Charles Cho. He's a Live Science contributor, and he did this little article about damaged robots that can heal itself in less than 2 minutes.
What
they're working on. Now, you got to get a load of this. It sounds a little bit crazy, a little science fictionish, I know, but stick with me on this, folks. What they're talking about is this. If you take a robot, let's say like the DARPA cheetah, it's a four-legged robot. One of the legs get blown off of it, or it gets tore off of it. It's pretty much useless from that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they're saying is they have programming that they're going to give robots basically a memory to look back on past things. So it knows when that doesn't work, where it's gone wrong. So it does a systems in air quote analysis check. They're going to, now this is, of course, we're talking there whenever we're talking about these companies, and this is what it could build to in the future. But the idea behind it is they have some six-legged robots that they've been working on, and they believe that it could adapt in little more than a minute to keep walking, even if one of its legs or even maybe two of its legs are damaged. So it's going to figure out how to balance, just like we talked about. I mean, I have a cat that has three legs. He gets around just fine. Now imagine that robot is built to replace, like that DARPA cheetah, maybe that front leg shifts a certain way to where now when one front leg is missing, it still has the power to balance. It keeps moving. But they're also talking about the fact that they think that they can, in the future, mount little robotic arms that can go to the joints and repair these broken legs and broken limbs. Now, that's pretty wild, but it's the co-author of this whole thing, of course, is Jean-Baptiste Marais. Now, that's the robotic. There are robotics at the Pierre and Marie Curie University in Paris. Now, that's where this has started. This is what they're leaning into. Now, Jean goes on to say that one thing we were surprised by the extent of the damage to which the robots could adapt so quickly to. So it's almost like they're thinking for themselves because it blew them away. They're talking about how quick you could damage a robot, and almost in less under a minute, that robot could figure it out and rebalance and go again.
Wow.
So how are you going to beat something like this?
You're not going to. You're going to have to develop some kind of EMP.
Yeah, well, and here's the reason why when I brought up the Nepal thing, that's kind of what they talked about in this. I never thought about it this way, but Murray says this, is if we send robots to find survivors, say, after an earthquake, or to put out forest fires, or to shut down a nuclear plant in the crisis like Fukushima, we need them to be able to keep working if they become damaged. And he's right. I never thought about that. But then you're going to have a whole crew of people there to work on these robots. Now you're not. these robots are going to be able to repair themselves. So you can pull up, open up a truck, all these robots pour out and go looking. If they damage, maybe you even have one robot fix the other robot while they're still going.
That's what happened in the Terminator film. Exactly. Is the robots were building themselves.
Well, next step, folks. Next step. Right.
I don't
here.
Like
this
it.
Is
I don't
it.
Like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So they talk about even in this article, an in-home robot assistant for sick or elderly people.
Now that would be good.
Well, but then they also talk about, well, how would the elderly folks fix it if it broke? Well, now they don't have to. If it breaks, it repairs itself. So that's what
I'm... Can you imagine an old person with a robot, though, at the house? I mean, they would be like, you know how they are. They don't catch on to technology.
Well, you and I laugh all the time about how bad our mothers got their ass kicked by a smartphone. Yeah. Could you imagine one of them trying to... Could you imagine your dad trying to operate one of those things working for him?
No.
He doesn't like half the people around him now.
No.
Much less a robot. That would not go over. He would... Yeah, it would just not go over. He would find a way to tear it up, run over the tractor, do something. It would piss him off.
I mean, it's a great idea, but I don't know in how theory, applicable it would be. Yeah.
But this whole article goes hand in hand with that DARPA because it, like we laugh, folks, and everybody knows how we talk about the DARPA and how we talk about Skynet and all that. If you take, like we've always said, the little threads of things that connect one another, tell me that doesn't sound like Skynet.
Well, you're 100% right. It does. I mean, yeah. we joke around about it, but I mean, it really is. It does seem like it's coming to fruition. That story is becoming reality, and it is scary. I mean, what would you be able to do to stop this race of robots if they're self-replicating? They can jump over stuff and they can infiltrate your house. You talk about the drones.
And in a minute, I mean, how
have you seen the new Amazon commercial where it shows all these drones like chasing people down the road? I mean, I'm thinking like, that's really what it's going to be like.
Well, and even you just bring that up. Even then, a drone gets damaged. It repairs itself and flies some more.
Mm.
I mean, these are things that's coming. This is what we're going to see if we keep going down this technologically advanced road that we're traveling on now. In another 15 years, maybe? I mean, exponentially, this stuff grows super fast. So I don't know how long it'll
take. And all
take.
Joking aside, not a robot over, you know, uprising or anything like that. I think it'll be a lot like the movie Star Wars. I mean, the humans have droids, and the droids work with the humans to help them do almost everything. Remember, even in the very first one, Luke's there with his uncle or whatever and on Tatooine, and the droids are there to help them with their farming and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that's probably what it's going to be like.
It'll turn into that, and then who knows? I mean, I don't know. I see things two different sides of the coin when you look at the whole robot intervention. I'm like, I don't want people to lose the being able to do a good job, a task. I don't want people to be losing their jobs and their well-being to robots. But in turn, there's a lot of people. I would say more than half the people in this country I know do jobs that they don't love. They just do them to pay the bills.
I believe that's everywhere.
Well, what if you could have robots to do those jobs and it opened up more freedom, more things for everybody to find the things that they love and then with interaction? I don't know. I want to see the positive light on this, but also, too, the realistic me is looking at it in a way that's like, it's what I've always talked about. I talked about a friend with it this past week. We were talking about things when they vote bills into being laws. I'm like, you don't have to worry about it right now, but what 30 years down the road is where I worry about what's coming up.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know who's going to and how they're going to use those laws. That's kind of the way it feels with this robot. Right now, it's a great idea. We're going to help the elderly. We're going to help people in the earthquakes. Yeah, that's great and all, but what about 30 years from now when there's guys that's figured out and it's all open sourced and there's a dictator out of wherever, you know, that's built a whole army of these things, and the next thing you know is now they're turned loose, and then how are you going to stop them? Then they turn on him, and then they build, and then what do you know? Skynet. Ta-da! It's all the world's at war again, so.
Yeah, well, let's stop thinking about that. Let's move on to some ancient history. Did you see this over at the National Geographic news? It was posted by Kristen Romney. It's about new evidence may solve mystery of America's huge ancient city of Cahokia.
Ooh, I love Cahokia.
Right. Now, researchers have long debated the reasons behind the rapid rise and fall and the disappearance of the Cahokia.
Was three-legged robots.
No.
Which
was a sprawling ancient city near the modern city of St. Louis. Now, we call it Cahokia. The people that actually live there did not call it Cahokia. We don't know what they called it.
Gotcha.
But anyways, a new analysis of the sediment. Now, this kind of, what made me think about this when I read this is all the flooding we're having here in Texas. This article actually happens to do with floods.
Really?
And they studied a bunch of sediment cores around the area, and it reveals that the city's ups and downs corresponded to the timing of the Mississippi River mega floods. Now, archaeological data shows that agricultural settlements first appeared in the area around 400 AD, and around 1050 AD, there was a veritable boom at Cahokia, which became a major political and cultural center with a population they believe that was in the tens of thousands. And by 1350, a span of only three centuries, Cahokia was gone.
Wow.
Now, to uncover the clues of the city's fate, the research team led by the University of Wisconsin-Madison, geographers Samuel Munoz and Jack Williams performed laser diffraction particle size analysis on sediment samples from Horseshoe Lake on Oxbow Lake nearby to the once was Cahokia. Mm-hmm. Now, the samples yielded evidence of eight separate flood events over the past 2,000 years, and researchers discovered that changes in the magnitude and frequency of the newly identified floods corresponded with the archaeological evidence for the changes in the population. So they noticed the time that there was a flood-free area, not area, flood-free time period that began around 600 AD. And when that happened, of course, settlements moved to higher slopes and they began to farm more. And because of the crops that were cultivated, the population in turn grew. Now, in time, Cahokia would become one of the largest prehistoric settlements in all of the United States. But then all of a sudden, it began to downfall, And they believe that it was due to drought, and they believe it was to over-exploitation of resources, and that human conflict happened. It's, you know, like we always talk about, if you put four or five mice in a box, there's no problem. But as you add more, it starts to cause more problems. The same thing as happens in modern cities nowadays. They believe that the area was so perfect for agriculture and everything that the population grew and to a point where they began to overexploit everything and people began fighting. And then in addition to that, these major floods started happening. So for a long time, people always thought it was because of drought and because of this overpopulation and because of the exploitation of resources. But what they now think is it was not just that. But in addition to that, there was major floods.
I got you.
Which totally destroyed the area. And they think that after several of these catastrophic floods, that they were even able to tell that the Mississippi rose for over 33 feet for a 10-year period. And the people just abandoned the town.
So it rose and it stayed.
Yeah, for a long time.
Wow.
So it just decimated the area, they believe. Wow. And that's so that they eventually just moved on. Now, Cahokia, we could do five episodes just on Cahokia.
We could,
it's a major thing. And we've talked about it before with other researchers that we've had on the show, and we'll probably have some more people on. I know I'd like to talk to Rick Osmond more about Cahokia and some other people. But anyways, fascinating stories.
Well, it's one of those things that we really don't know much about it. What do you think we probably honestly really, really know? 10-20% of what we really know about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't really know why it was built. I mean, we can speculate and all. It's one of those great mysteries that I wish that they would take a little more and study a little bit more. And maybe they have, and it's just that's all that it really has to tell.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sure they have, but they don't really teach you that. I remember when I was in high school, I never heard of Monk's Mound or Cahokia or anything. And you're talking about a city that they believe was 100,000 people?
Yes. For a long time.
For a long time?
Yeah.
No one ever talks about that.
Nobody brings it's that like, part
no,
up.
Yeah. No. The Native Americans were all savages. They didn't have towns or anything. No. They because lived in teepees, don't you know? Wiki-ups. Don't you know anything?
Yeah, that's why it goes against that part. Yeah, because if they taught you that, then you start looking at it in a different light, like we've discussed. You're like, ooh, we did way worse things than what we thought.
Well, several archaeologists believe that the Mayans actually originated in North America.
Mm-hmm. I've read that, too.
Yeah. To South America and set up shop in the Yucatan Peninsula, so... Which is another funny story about Yucatan. The name Yucatan.
Yeah.
You know that that's not what the people called it.
No, it just pretty much means the jungle, doesn't it?
No, the explorers, when they first met the Mayans there, they asked them, what do you call this place? And the guy said, Yucatan. And they're like, oh, it's called the Yucatan. What he meant, Yucatan just meant, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't understand you.
Oh, no, that's even better. Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, that's even better. That's funny. Well, I got to see something here. You got your pen out?
Yes, I do.
This comes from a UFO.
I'm sensing a UFO case number.
This is a case number. You ready?
Yes, sir.
65719. All right. This comes from Hampton, Tennessee. The reason I grabbed onto this is for you and I had talked to Nick, and we talked to Nick off air quite a bit after we did all the interviews and stuff. We kept going back into the shapes. Remember, you and I, Nick, were sitting in here and had a few drinks. We were talking about the shapes of UFOs and how it's changed over the time.
Well, that's cigar shapes to egg shapes to triangles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I found this. This encounter comes, like I said, from Hampton, Tennessee, from 1958, whenever the witness actually saw a large metallic circular craft. So the old school, the round disc-shaped crafts, said it moved slowly near a mountain less than 1,000 foot off the ground. Now, they don't remember the exact date, the witness doesn't, but it occurred as they think that they were a freshman or a sophomore in high school in 58. But this is what it says. It says it was late afternoon with plenty of light and a few clouds. My cousin and I were sitting in the yard watching traffic on the small, narrow country road at the corner of what is now Railroad Street and Rittertown Road in, of course, Hampton, Tennessee. He said the two were looking east when the cousin asked, "What is that?" He says, "I looked up and saw a very large circular craft, maybe 1,000 feet or a little more off the ground, descending. Okay, descending in a slant from right to left, and it disappeared behind a large mountain to the left." Now, when he says descending, it makes me think like it's landing. It's going to go down.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing, right?
Now, says they described the object as this, that it was so large, it was probably 1/3 as large as the mountain. It was gray or silver in color and had a shape similar to a round aspirin tablet on the side, on its side there. So we could see a little of the bottom side as well as the top. So it didn't make any sound, and nor do I remember any lights in the daylight. There was no smoke trail behind it, and it was below the clouds, so our vision was not impeded by any means. Now, the witness always wondered what the object could have been, said it was obviously a metal flying craft of any kind, though, that doesn't exist today, let alone in the 1950s. So they haven't seen anything like it in the sky to date, let alone, of course, back then. Now, apparently more witnesses came forward. And it says, when I went to high school the next day, several people from our little town talked about seeing it also. A story circulated in the newspaper in Bristol, Tennessee, that they had published a story the next day about a craft crashing in the mountains there. Now, the rumor was that several people went to the woods to investigate and smelled something like sulfur. Now, we've heard that often.
That's right, yeah.
A sulfury smell in the air. And then someone, of course, reported seeing a little man in a tree. Now, of course, the last part was only a rumor, and they was said maybe there was a report in the paper in Bristol, Tennessee, but the exact direction of the craft headed was whenever they saw it. So it confirmed that other people had seen it going the exact same way that they saw it. So it wasn't just these two people, multiple people, and it was even, like I said, reported in the papers. And then, of course, there was witnesses was hoping that maybe the newspaper coverage could be researched today. They were hoping to get more witnesses come forward and says, "I've never forgotten the incident," and wondered if anyone else had ever seen what was reported as a UFO. And they were hoping that there would be some more investigations to it and would sure like to hear if there was anything found out about it. So that's a really interesting thing to me is, like we were talking about, it's just the shapes. It's almost like you can look at decades. Decades change shapes.
You're 100% right. This happened in the 50s, so it fits the paradigm of what UFOs were supposed to look like.
Yep.
And I always wonder with you, I'm with you 100%. Is it that these shapes are changing, or is it because people hear somebody else describe a shape, then therefore they see the shape? So almost like people's stories are influencing other people's sightings.
And what,
you know what I'm saying? Because it does seem to shift.
Yeah. Well, and I've thought about that too. Like you and I have talked about what ifs, a lot of what ifs. Well, what if these things, these beings, if it is extraterrestrial, or even if it's terrestrial and it's just something else altogether, if they know and it changes by who they're being around, you know, they know that. What's the best way? Well, it can't look like this. Let's make it look like that. So that way it's more believable to them, or it's harder for them to put a finger on it to go, yeah, that's real, because it almost seems unbelievable. The fact that we're so used to seeing something fly and leave some sort of chemtrail or vapor trail or smoke trail or anything and make noise, and it doesn't do any of that. You know, I don't know. It almost seems like these things play on people's minds too.
I agree. And well, I will say this: the Belgium Wave and all these other times, the Rendlesham Forest crash, where it looked like they saw a triangular shaped craft. Well, the F-117 stealth fighter, it's triangle shaped. Could that have been a lot of them testing that before that was mainstream? You know what I'm saying?
Because
they start seeing these triangle shaped UFOs, and then 10, 12 years later, the F-117 is flying around, and that's when the government openly says, oh, yeah, this is our new stealth fighter. Is that a coincidence? Because, I mean, it is weird that people were seeing something in the skies that was the exact same shape as something that finally was developed.
Yeah, I very well could.
Yeah, you know, we'll never know.
Yeah.
Moving on, I think you're going to find this story pretty interesting, and this comes from the National Geographic News also by Kelly McMillan. It's about how has the last human being trekked to the North Pole. They're talking about thinning Arctic ice and lack of air support in the area might mean that no one else is going to go up to the North Pole anymore.
Really?
I never really thought about it.
No.
Now, it says, faced with, you know, bad logistical support and challenges related to climate change, human-powered trips to the North Pole may be on the brink of extinction. Now, North Pole expeditions are going the way of the passenger pigeon, says a Mr. Eric Larson, a Colorado-based polar explorer, who has completed 3 North Pole expeditions himself. Now, according to Tom Sorgen from AdventuresStats.com, who's a record keeper of Arctic feats and a true North Pole expedition, he says, must travel from the coastline of either Alaska, Greenland, Canada, or Russia over the polar ice mass all the way to the North Pole, which sits at a latitude of 90 degrees north. Now, once the journey to the North Pole has been completed, it's acceptable to be picked up by either a helicopter or plane because you've actually done it now. But according to purists, now these are, you know, expedition purists, they say the preferred expedition style is completely human powered. Now, this is what you would do because you're a minimalist and an outdoorsman. They don't like the cheating of using boats or planes. A pure explorer wants to do it all human powered. That means that they do it unsupported, unassisted. They have no airdrop supplies. They have no external aid such as dogs, kites, or, you know, snowmobiles or any motorized vehicles. You have to do it yourself. Now, since Admiral Robert Peary purportedly completed the first expedition to the North Pole in 1909, only 47 of the 247 treks completed to 90 degrees north have been unsupported and unassisted. I did not know that.
No. I had no idea.
I thought it would be far more than that, right? Even the total number of treks gone to the North Pole, only 247? I thought there was like, you know, 20, 30 of those a year going on.
Yeah, I guess not.
Apparently not. Now, in an unsupported expedition, North Pole travelers must ski, snowshoe, swim, and climb while towing a 300-pound sled of supplies approximately 480 miles, which they said usually takes about 50 to 70 days. Now, along the way, there's going to be mounds of ice the size of houses, which you have to get over. There's 30-degree water to traverse, and travelers must swim across wearing full-body rubber suits normally. And air temperatures often hover around 40 degrees below zero. This Larson says it's the most difficult expedition on the planet that nobody really knows about. Well, the window to join this exclusive, painful club might be closing faster than we think, Cam. They said that the last unassisted journey to be completed probably could be within the next couple of years because the ice is thinning. And what was easily done before, it's not as easy as it used to be. The Arctic ice, they said that in March 2015 was at the lowest thickness that it's ever, that they've ever seen. And that normally this, whatever they call the multi-year ice, that's what they call it, which is the oldest ice, that this is the ice that survives the summer. You know, like every year it freezes up and then it thaws out, but this multi-year ice is always there. It's disappearing at a rate of 15.1% every decade, and it's only growing in number. So they don't know how much long this multi-year ice is even going to be there. And they say, no, if there's no multi-year ice to camp on, you're going to be camping on super thin ice that's easy to melt, and you could literally be sleeping in your tent at night and fall through into the ocean.
Not good.
Right?
That's not what you want to have happen on your camp out.
Right, and that's not the only thing. They said air charters to the North Pole have begun stopping, too. That there's this company called Ken Bork Air, and they did their last flight to the Arctic just a couple months ago. They said they're no longer doing it because of the price of doing it, logistics, that they're not even going to run up there anymore. So I'm sure you could privately hire a company, but a lot of people are bailing on it.
Wow.
Because it's not, I guess it's not safe for them to even land on it anymore.
We'll just give it a few more years because we're going to slip back into the next ice age.
Right. Well, they say, well, Santa Claus is going to have to find a new place to set up shop because it looks like most of the North Pole's melted.
Isn't that crazy,
though? It is crazy, though. I never really thought about it. Like I said, I was blown away by the fact that, you know, since Admiral Peary did it in 1909, that only 247 unassisted treks have ever...
I guess, too, though.
Not unassisted, only 247 treks have been made to the North Pole. Only 47 have been unassisted.
I guess it's also, too, there's really nothing up there.
No. No.
You're not traveling up there to gain anything.
No, you're 100% right. But, you know, Mount Everest, I mean, it's like going to the mall now.
Yeah, well, it was. Now, of course, everything got shook up. But you're right. That is so weird. That is such a strange thing. Well, I'm going to shift gears one more time before we go into break. Kyle, you ever been to the Freehold, New Jersey?
I guess I sure have.
Freehold Township?
Heck yeah, that's where Bruce Springsteen's from, the boss.
There was a New Jersey woman. Of course, this is some cryptozoology news, folks. There's a New Jersey woman who claims that there was a reptilian humanoid entered her house, paralyzed her, and took her expensive watch with some sort of circular energy tool.
What?
Yeah. Now, this is an anonymous woman, and she claimed that on this past Saturday, she was watching a little television in her bedroom about 11:30, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then she claimed that this is when the being came in. She said, my bedroom door was closed, my window was open about a foot or so. And this is, apparently this all took place, you know, now, this is what's funny. She reported this on Saturday. Now, this all took place apparently a few years ago. But this is, of course, to the Mufon. The Mufon. I don't have the case number. I'm sorry. I would get you the number if you like it. But she said, with my light on, I reached over to pick up my remote and turn off the TV, and I saw this thing in the room with me just to my left at the bottom of my bed. Now, reportedly, as she reached forward, she says, to grab the entity, she was paralyzed and put back into bed. So I guess it just knocked her back over. Now, she said her main concern was her wristwatch, because she wears it all the time. She said, I remember saying, don't touch my watch. Don't touch my watch.
It was one of those new fancy Apple watches.
This is from a few years ago. But look, I don't know about you, but my main concern isn't going to be a wristwatch, especially if I'm a female alone in a room, paralyzed.
And
there's a lizard at the end of it. I'm not thinking, don't touch my watch. I'll be thinking, don't touch my, you know, my no-no squares. What I'm going to be thinking, I don't want this big lizard getting. And then he goes on and said, I always sleep with it on. Said, I was fighting to stay awake, and I was on the verge of blacking out. Now, she reports that seconds later, this creature lifted her arm and used a mysterious tool that she describes as being circular and yellowish-white light, and it was about an inch and a half thick, and it had an erratic electric type of energy, and took her watch off because it just immobilized her arm. And then she said she was able, she said that she was able to take a clear look at the intruder. This is what she says. It was bending over me, looking at me at the moment. I remember with excellent memory, the being had very tight snake skin, a yellow dominant and white and black accent colors, a snout with snake eyes is what she called it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, according to her, it was around 8:45 that next morning that she was able to move. And she said, I told a friend about this, and she said to look up reptile aliens online, and the exact alien, of course, she says, was right there. Now, you and I have talked about, a few weeks ago, we discussed about the guy in Florida that thought he took a picture of one looking around behind him.
They're driving in a car.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. Now, she says, I felt violated, amazed, and a host of other emotions that I still feel to this day. And she said, adding a few weeks later, she went to the hospital seeking someone to talk to about the accident. It turned out, she said, not to be a good idea. And she explains that she advises others who have experienced a similar encounter to avoid seeking medical help. She says, all they want to do is commit me. She said, I will never go to the hospital for this kind of experience. And, she doesn't think anybody else should, too.
Well, you can go to the hospital. Just don't tell them what happened. I mean, I would never admit that, my arm scraped up because a lizard man was in my room and he stole my watch.
Well, it just blows me away that's what she was more concerned about was that watch.
I don't think this woman's all there.
You don't?
No.
We know our watch isn't there. I mean, is it?
I don't know.
Was it like a Rolex?
What are we talking about? Or something?
Yeah, we got a tag. So I don't know.
Movado.
It's just, it's crazy. The whole idea. Look, I'm not saying it didn't happen, folks. Like we always say, I wasn't there. I'm not saying it didn't happen. But my thing is this. If you have a circular energy device that's able to numb a whole arm and allow you to slide a watch off of somebody, if you have the ability to travel wherever they traveled from unseen and just appear and slide in through a closed bedroom door or through a 1 foot crack in the window in some way and slip in and paralyze a woman, why the hell do you need a watch?
Because they just like accessories. I mean, some people are just into accessories.
She wasn't wearing it. He wasn't all blinged up with it.
Well, he just takes it back. Or
was
she?
It Paul Wall makes a watch?
It's a female's watch. So maybe, he's going to give it to his girlfriend.
Maybe he is, his lady friend. I don't know. I see all that. I'm like, but why do you need
a watch? He's like, it's our anniversary. I didn't get anything. Hold on, let me step through this dimension.
Yeah.
And take this wristwatch and
this old guy, let me see what she got on. Oh, snaps. Check out that watch.
Yeah.
And then he just grabbed it and slipped off.
Could be.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Well, let's take a break, folks. When we get back from the break, we're going to be speaking about the Hat Man. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back, my friends. Hope you enjoyed the news. Still laughing. I'm still laughing about the whole watch thing. The whole deal was funny. But this is something that's not to really be laughed about. We've talked about some of these sightings in the past and these accounts. And Kyle's done a big segment on them before when we talk about, you know, maybe it's sleep paralysis. Maybe a lot of this stuff is imagined. And then we've even gotten emails and phone calls that we've gotten from listeners that tell the stories and like, that's exactly what happened to me. Or you get them on the other hand, it goes, that's not exactly what happened to me. I wasn't asleep. I was at work. I was wide awake, or I was walking and I saw this thing, and this is exactly what it is. So without further ado, Kyle, why don't you tell them what we're talking about?
Yeah, we're going to be talking, like you said, we've talked about this phenomenon off and on throughout the shows. And it really is pretty interesting when it comes to shadow people and the Hat Man. Now, the Hat Man is one particular type that's a little bit different than a shadow person sometimes, but other times he's often seen where he does kind of look like a shadow person. And we get emails from time to time. And I got an actual listener story from a man named Steve from Alabama who tells his frightening tale. And we'll play that for you in a little bit. But recently I was reading a book, and it's by the woman that created the name Shadow Person, and also the woman that created the name The Hat Man, Heidi Hollis.
Yeah.
And she's got a new book out called The Hat Man, A True Story of Evil Encounters. And if you're interested in these stories about shadow people and the Hat Man in particular, you're really going to like this book. The book's action-packed. It's by Levelhead Publishing, and it has over 50 stories of people that have written Heidi and telling their tales. We're going to read a couple of those for you today. I'll put links to it on the show notes. But anyways, the Hat Man himself, he can often be described as wearing a long black trench coat, sometimes a three-piece suit with a collared shirt, but he's always wearing this flat-rimmed, like gaucho-style hat, or like a flat-brimmed cowboy hat. And some people have even seen him wearing a gold watch, like a pocket watch that's hanging on the side of his, you know, vest on a chain. Or sometimes it's a top hat. But, you know, it's really creepy. And some people have even described him having solid black eyes, much like a black-eyed kid. Others have seen him with glowing red eyes. But the most common theme is that the guy always has a hat. He always has a hat.
Look, I first had fear instilled in me when I was like 6 years old by the Shadow Hat Man. I was with my mom, and she was off in the living room someplace, like watching Oprah or whatever the TV had at that era. And I was playing with my trucks. I was pushing them along the ground, and we were making little roads and everything. And I found myself on my knees in the laundry room. And I don't know how long I'd been playing there, but I looked up, and I was so terrified by what I seen that even today I can't even be alone. I just have so much fear that's built into my personality now. I looked up and I saw a shadow man. It was just a silhouette of blackness with a hat on top of it. And I don't know, it gives me the chills to think how long he might have been watching me down there playing. But he was watching me. And I looked back at him and I could see that there's this evilness in him, this presence, overbearing, malevolent presence. And it just shocked me, and I didn't know the fear was like what you would see if you got your family hit by a car right in front of you. That rush of adrenaline that would shoot inside of your body. I had that fear, and it was gripping me. And it would just, it tore at me so hard. And I stared back at him, and he had this silhouette, wide shoulders, a hat. He looked like he was wearing a trench coat. And he seemed to absorb the light and get blacker and blacker. This was in the middle of the day, and he's outside the window, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm seeing blackness there. I was so afraid. I ran to my mom, and I thought that I'd never be able to shake this. And my entire life, I've had this fear inside of me because of the Shadow Hat Man. 2 weeks ago, he came back, and I tried to confront him. I came at him. And he disappeared into this mirror that was sitting on my desk. I'm telling you, anybody that's watching this, I looked at him and I stared at him. He didn't flinch. He didn't move away. He's still out there. And if you're watching this video, you gotta know, we've gotta stop the Shadow Hat Man.
People have described him as being pale, tall, even gray-like skin, like a graylian. They may have a noticeable goatee or a mustache. Some say that he's taller than a normal person, but it's still quite human looking like.
Mm-hmm.
And he can appear at any location. He's commonly reported in people's bedrooms, mostly when they're asleep at night. But they always say that people have a feeling that kind of comes over them that someone's watching. You ever get that feeling like something's in the room, somebody's watching you, and that's when they start noticing this Hat Man. Now, who is this Hat Man? You know, that's the most important question. A number of people, dating back to an old, untold period of time, have reported encounters with this thing, and they say that it's a malevolent entity whose intentions are not good. Now, one of the things that happens, much like the stories of the Mothman, is that when you see the Hat Man, that usually means something bad's going to happen, whether it's bad luck or a death of a friend or family, or even yourself, maybe. You know, who knows? There could be countless people that have actually seen the Hat Man that later expired. It's not known.
There's not many fears I have in life about a lot of things, and things I saw when I was a kid that I never thought I'd see again, and I hoped and prayed I didn't, was this Shadowhead guy. And as a kid, I lived in this log cabin in the mountains, and I closed my door at night, and I had this full-length mirror that was really cool, and it was old. And I'd lay there in bed, and I'd just kind of stare at it and be amused by it. And one night, in the middle of the night, I saw this figure that was gleaming from this mirror, and it was dark and scary and foreboding and evil almost. And it was this Shadow Hat guy. And I thought, okay, no, I must be dreaming. I got to be dreaming. So I closed my eyes, and I tried to wish it away, and I opened them again, and it was there. It was like, I couldn't believe it. I didn't understand it. And I got to do something, you know? And I pulled the covers over my head, and I hunkered down with my cat, and I pulled the covers back, and it was still there. And it felt like he was coming for me, like he was reaching. And I remember like, oh my God. And I closed my eyes, and then he was gone. And I didn't see him again for the longest time. And then again, this ominous man, this freaky shadow out of the corner of my eye when I was riding my horse. And I thought, no way. It's during the daytime. It can't be like that. And I rode around and I rode around, and I just started shaking, and I felt tears in my eyes. And I just was like, this is not real. This is not real. And I just thought, okay, well, I'm having a bad dream again, but I'm riding a horse, but I'm having a bad dream. And I slowed him down, and I stopped, and I turned, and I could have sworn I saw him again. And then he was gone. And I had always thought that moment in my life I could put away, because fear carried with me for so long. And just when I thought it was safe, I let it go. And boom, that guy was there again. I don't know what else to say, and I don't know who's listening, but I had to tell somebody. I have to let people know that guy is out there. He really is out there.
But I find these stories fascinating. What's so fascinating to me is, much like when I talk about the boogeyman or these other things, it's not just one person having this experience. And as time goes on, now, of course, there's always going to be people that are making up these stories.
Mm-hmm,
but there are people that, you know, I think are pretty legit. Like, I've received emails and even heard people tell stories. And, man, I just don't think that these people are making this stuff up. Why would they? And it's scary to me. Not that this thing's creepy enough by its look, but what is it, the Hat Man? Like, why is it taking on that shape? If this, whatever this is, it looks like a man almost.
Why does everybody see the exact same thing?
The exact same thing. It's pretty scary. And one of the things that Heidi actually talks about in her book is that, and you're going to get scared by this, is she says that as much as my research on the Hat Man progressed, so did what appeared to be an uncanny awareness of the part on the part of the Hat Man that I was tracking him down. Sometimes when we look for these entities, something appears to alert them as to what we're doing. So as she researched the Hat Man more and more, she actually started seeing him herself.
It starts looking back.
Right? We've heard of that before. Now, some of these tales, let's get into some of these crazy stories. Now, this first one is from Heidi's book, and it goes like this. Now, she says, "Dear Heidi, when I was around 5 years old, I woke up to a man in my bedroom. He wore a black fedora hat and a black overcoat. His skin was pale and grayish. I could see his face pretty clearly. When I more fully woke up, he left my room. I was extremely scared, so I ran into my parents' bedroom to wake them both up. The closet door inside of their bedroom was wide open, and when I passed by the closet, I sort of glanced inside of it. The man that I had seen was standing in the closet. He stood almost to the top of the closet door frame, so he had to be between 6'5" and 7 feet tall. His face was old and reminded me of an older Boris Karloff. He had huge hound dog eyes and had a faint gray and white mustache against his pale grayish skin. As I walked past the closet and saw him now standing in there, I freaked out and quickly tried waking up my parents. I shook my dad to get up because of the man in their closet. My dad awoke along with my mom, and they turned on the lights to find out if there was any man in the closet or not. I tried to explain that he must have left as I was busy trying to wake them up. I always believed I wasn't having a nightmare, even though my parents tried to convince me otherwise. My entire life, I kind of thought he might have been a predator or a kidnapper or just a burglar that might have been in our house. Since I always did think of the event as a real occurrence, I even told my wife about it, as it was a childhood memory that had always stalked me. Then while surfing around the internet, I stumbled upon your website and have found many, many others that have similar encounters. I don't feel as if he was menacing other than he was just a strange man in my house staring at me, but it did scare me as a child, enough for me to remember it quite vividly 45 years later. So see, this is an early tale of this guy having this experience. And what is that? It was just in his room, like staring at him.
Just lingering.
And then he was in his parents' closet, and then they turned the lights on and he disappeared. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is creepy. Brother, I got you one right here. You're going to like this one. You ready?
Uh-huh.
So the story starts when I was 5 years old. My mom had just sent me to bed, though I protested with all that I had. As I was lying in bed, refusing to close my eyes, I looked at my bedroom door and saw something odd manifest. A bright red tunnel with horizontal lines began to form and literally come out of the door. My room was completely black, except for the light coming from this red tunnel. That's when I saw this man in black appear. He came right out of the tunnel, wearing a black trench coat and top hat. He was walking towards me, but he wasn't actually getting any closer or gaining ground. I was completely filled with terror as I started to scream for my mom to come. My mom came running into my room and I told her what I had saw as fast as I could. I wasn't believed, of course. It wasn't until much later that I learned from my sister that she had seen this hat man too. She claimed to have even had conversations with him, but she couldn't remember anything that was said. But my mom would always ask her who she was talking to, and she would reply, "The man in the hat and the coat." Now, my sister eventually moved away to college, and she had a good friend who lived next door to her. One time in the middle of the night, her friend came banging on the door saying that a man in a top hat was sitting on her bed. My sister told me that she laughed and said, "He's probably just looking for me." My other sister said that her new boyfriend claimed that he saw the hat man standing right over him in bed as soon as she left the house. Tons of strange and bad luck have always been part of my life. I've even had dreams of being in a dark place with shadow watchers and shadow people in rooms with cages. I believe that this hat man that's been visiting us is pure evil.
Man, that's creepy. Really creepy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
What's the best part I like about it is that even after the sister moved, it was still like it was following her.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Boyfriend even saw it too, right?
Well, but yeah, but I'm talking about the sister that said that her roommate next door in college said it was sitting on her bed.
Yeah.
He's like, it's probably just looking for me.
Check this one out. While living in San Francisco, when I was 5 years old, my sister was 6 at the time, we saw something really strange one night. I don't know what brought our attention to look out of our bedroom window, but when we did, we saw this strange-looking man outside. He was going around the neighbor's house, looking in through their windows, and he just kept going around and around and around the house. That was weird enough. But what's really strange is that he looked like a man straight out of the 1800s, with a long trench coat and a top hat on, all in black. We couldn't help but stare at him, a little bit to see what he was up to, but we couldn't make any sense of what he was doing. We had only seen him for a few moments, when he suddenly turned quickly, as if to stare right at us. Me and my sister screamed, and we pulled the curtains to hide that we were looking at him. But we only waited a couple of seconds before we decided to peek out again. Somehow, he got right up to our window. His face was so horrifying to see. He had the most sinister grin across his face, like the Joker out of Batman. He was older, like in his 60s, and heavily wrinkled. We screamed and ran away from the window and told our mom. It was a good thing that she believed us and told us that it was the devil, so she said to say a prayer and that would protect us from him. And thinking back on it all, the feeling of terror that came over us was unbelievable. But there was no doubt in our mind that this thing was real. He could move fast. Our neighbor's house was over 100 feet away, and this hat man had cleared it in only a few moments right up to our window. Now, when you hear that description of an elderly man grinning, it reminds me of those Grinning Man stories.
Yes,
and even
does.
David
yes.
Weatherly said that he saw a grinning man, remember?
Yes.
On a road, I believe, in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
When I start hearing these descriptions, it makes me think of the movie like, what is it, Jeepers Creepers? You know what his face looks like on
yes.
that? That's what I get the impression of.
Well, I am going to get you one, Philly. We're going to jump across the water a little bit. This one comes actually from Germany.
Okay.
All right. This one comes was sent to Miss Heidi. It says, I was stationed in Germany and I had the night shift for guard duty. I thought I was running late because I missed my alarm clock. So I woke up startled and started rushing around, getting my uniform on as fast as I could. And then after that, I ran into the bathroom to shave when I thought I saw someone walk by the doorway. Well, that's his first mistake, in my opinion, shaving. The story
says, in the military, probably.
I don't care. And it says, no civilians were allowed in the barracks.
Yeah, see? So it's you can't grow a beard unless you're a part of the special forces.
I guess that's, yeah. Well, and then what he said, I like that, though, the fact instantly, no civilians are allowed in the barracks.
Right.
And we were all housed, and in the barracks were pretty empty. Okay, so he says he's got up late. Barracks are empty. And since most of the guys were out doing an overnight exercise, of course, there's really nobody there. He says, so I looked to see if I could spot the civilian I thought I saw. But no one was down the hallway in either direction. I had to get ready quickly, so I went back to the sink to rinse out my shaver. Says, when I looked up, I saw the reflection of this man in a black-rimmed hat and trench coat standing behind me. And I asked him, who are you and how did you get here? As he tipped his hat as if to introduce himself, he said, I'm Scratch. I then turned around to see him directly, but he was gone. Then I rolled out of my bed onto the floor. I had never gotten out of bed. Had it all been only a dream? It didn't seem like it, and it felt as real as anything. I was so shaken up by this experience that it bothered me enough to do some research on this name, Scratch. I later found out that Old Scratch is a Norse term for the devil. It felt like I had met pure evil, and he introduced himself as such. Well, that right there goes back again to the whole pure evil thing.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like, well, and he doesn't know if he had a dream or if it really happened. He doesn't say it felt like it really happened. Did he, you know, who knows? It's the whole thing is disturbing. The thing that gets me, though, is like what you and I've been talking about. The hat man stuff. Why is it all about this hat, this trench coat, all in a trench coat and all in a hat?
I have no idea. But, you know, there are other sightings that are that doesn't sound like he's as human. It sounds more like a shadow person.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned earlier, a guy named Steve from Alabama recently called the show and told this terrible, terrifying story
mm-hmm.
about a shadow person. Let's listen to that.
Hey, Cam and Kyle, just want to start by saying I love your show. My name's Steven. I'm a ordained minister, associate pastor / hospice chaplain. I've got a few experiences I was wanting to share with you. This happened about close to 4 years ago. It happened over about a 2-week period of time. I'll just start. Give a little preamble to the story. left a job to go to work at a plastics company, and so that I could be at home with my family more. And there was two gentlemen that owned the business, and they were at work a lot. And one of the guys was just a horrible person. It was hateful. He'd cuss you out, and he used to belittle me for, you know, my faith in God. And but anyhow, when I first started the job, I was I prayed for the guy on my way to work every morning. Prayed that he would have a good day and that everything would go well. Prayed that God would bless him. But after about a month or so of working there, it just kept wearing on me and wearing on me, to the point where I started harboring bad feelings in my heart towards this man. One night at home, I fell asleep on the couch watching TV, and it was probably about 2 a.m. My wife usually would wake me up and get me to come get in bed with her. Anyhow, I was asleep, and it sounded like hundreds of people in my living room talking at the same time. At first, I thought that's my wife coming to wake me up, and before I opened my eyes, I got scared because I realized that that was not my wife's voice. And it sounded almost like if you were to go to the mall during Christmas time, how it's just packed with people and everybody's just chattering at the same time. And there was no coherent speech that I could recognize. So I didn't know what it was saying, but it sounded like probably 200 people in my living room. And when I opened my eyes, probably about a foot, 2 foot above me, staring me right in the face was this thing that, it looked like a monster. Its face was white like a porcelain doll, and its mouth was all contorted like almost like a shark. It just had this real wicked grin on its face, and its mouth was just full of jagged, gnarly teeth, and its eyes were almost like a snake's eye or, a cat. Its pupils went up and down, but it was a bright orange eyes that was just burning, like almost glowing. And it had on a cloak or this tunic-looking thing, like kind of like a cape, and it was just flowing like it looked like its clothes was alive and just moving. And I mean, just in a split second, something just sucked it out of the room. Just lightning fast. And it was almost like, whoops, you were not supposed to see that, but anyhow, that happened. And it really upset me. I mean, for, several days, I was just upset, wondering what this was, how did this happen? And, it's very shocking to see something like that, because you don't think that things like that exist. And, the moment that you find out, hey, this is real, this is really real, I mean, it's just shocking to you. It blows your mind. Anyhow, at night, I used to have a practice where I would walk around my house at night and, just pray for my family and, talk to God about things. And, but during this time, I started just getting a terrible feeling. It was a feeling of fear. And I would walk around my house, and there was a spot right outside of my bedroom window. I could have put an X on the ground exactly where it was, but the closer I got to it, the worse I felt. And, when I would get real close to the spot, it would just make me ill, like just get a sickening feeling in my stomach, a feeling of fear. It was almost like you're falling. And, if you've ever jumped off of a high dive or something, that feeling where it just takes your stomach away. kind of like on a roller coaster. Probably about 4 or 5 days after my experience on the couch with this demonic creature or whatever it is, I was asleep on the couch again, stupid me. And I remember being woke up again around the same time, between 2 and 3 in the morning. This time I was awoke by the same feeling I got whenever I would get close to the spot outside, just a sickening feeling. And it's actually the worst feeling I've ever had in my life. Well, I woke up, opened up my eyes, and I realized that I couldn't move. And actually, what woke me out of my sleep was that bad feeling. I thought, man, I'm getting sick. I'm going to have to go, you know, throw up or something. I was woke by that feeling, and when I opened my eyes, I couldn't move anything. I know it's the typical old hag syndrome or whatever people want to call it. I was on the couch. I opened my eyes and was skimming around the room trying to figure out what was going on. Well, I couldn't move anything, not a toe, nothing. I could only move my eyes. I remember I could blink. I remember my eyes being very dry, and I remember I was able to blink my eyes to, you know, moisten them. All of a sudden, over the back of the couch, there was a black mist, and I remember seeing it creep up over the couch, almost kind of like fog would, you know, roll over a cliff. And it was just like something out of a, you know, a horror film. Well, it materialized into a, like a silhouette of a person. And it was a big, strong person. Like, I mean, it was almost, had the form of the Incredible Hulk. Like it was bigger and more muscular than a human should be. You know, I've never seen anybody that was this buff. But anyhow, it materialized, and it was like black velvet. It wasn't translucent. You couldn't see through it. But what shocked me was it was physical. Like, I could feel it touching me like a person. At first, it was almost like somebody draping a quilt or a blanket over your body. And then it felt like a forearm. And this thing was pushing me down in the couch, and I could hear, you know, this couch, it's actually a love seat, that it's a double reclining love seat is what it is. Being laying down, I remember hearing it creaking, like, I mean, it was extreme, almost like, you know, the durability of the couch was definitely being challenged or pushed to the limit. And I heard the framing and the boards inside of it, you know, creaking. And I could look over with my eyes that the cushions on the couch was flush or level with the top of my body. So I was pushed down far enough for this thing, you know, to completely push me down in the couch as far as I could go, basically. And, you know, the worst part about it all was a feeling. I don't know how to explain it, but this demon or shadow person, whatever it was, it exuded a feeling, like it just kind of emanated from this thing, and I could feel it. And it was every negative, bad emotion you could possibly feel. Like, I felt extreme fear, hatred. Like, for some reason, this thing hated me. Like, it hated me more than anything I've ever hated in my life. It was angry, full of hate, and just wicked. It was just pure wickedness coming out of this thing, and it made me so sick. I thought I'm about to die. I thought it was going to kill me, but it had its forearm across my body, kind of like a seatbelt would. It just goes across you, and it was pushing down on my throat, and had my head turned to the side, and it pressed its face right up against my face. I mean, it was almost like taunting me, like, you know, what are you going to do? What can you do? Like, I'm doing this to you, and there's nothing you can do. Here I am. I'm a, you know, ordained minister, pastor of a church, and I thought, how is this happening to me? You know, I've always been, you know, inclined to believe that, you know, God protects us from these things, which she does. And I will, I'll explain, you know, at the end, really, what my conclusion was to the whole matter. But anyhow, this thing was choking me out and had its face pressed up against mine. As soon as it happened, it was over. You know, it probably didn't last but maybe a minute, but it felt like forever. Anyhow, I jumped up and I ran down the hall, and I remember falling several times because my legs would not work. My brain was saying run, flee, escape, retreat. And I ran to my bedroom, falling several times. Anyhow, I woke my wife up and told her, I said, something bad just happened. In which, you know, I've never had anything interesting or no kind of paranormal things happen to me prior to these, instances. But anyhow, to make a long story short, it was over. But that night, whenever I, you know, tried to go to sleep, I remember being contorted. Like, it was almost like something, like if you're laying flat on your back and somebody kind of scoops around and picks you up from behind your waist, like your body is arched, like almost like you're doing a back bend. Well, that happened to me. And I remember waking up and feeling that fear again. And it felt like something was trying to steal my spirit or my soul or whatever. And I actually was feeling my soul or spirit leaving my body. And I mean, it scared me so bad, guys. And I remember trying to scream, and my wife woke up and noticed that I was being up real funny. And she just kind of hollered, what's going on here? Or, you know, what are you doing? And I explained to her, you know, what was happening. So we prayed. Anyhow, that was the end of that experience. But the next night, some really strange stuff started happening. And this is where things really go off the reservation. Every night, I would have the same dreams. I would have a dream. I was asleep, and these things start peeking through the wall. Like, they come from the other side of the wall, like our bed's up against the wall, so our heads are, you know, against the wall. And these things were coming through, like halfway through the wall, and they would, you know, grab me and start trying to lift me up and take me through the wall. And it's the same dream every night. Every night, the same thing. You know, I know a lot of people think, well, that's alien abduction, you know. But these things didn't look like your typical aliens. They were very tall, emaciated, skinny. It basically just looked like skin stretched over a bone. And their fingers were very long. So they were so big that when they grabbed my arm, it wrapped all the way around my arm. And anyhow, when they grabbed me, I remember being shocked because these things were powerful, like very, very strong. And it surprised me because they were real lanky and gangly, you know, and their faces kind of looked like what a mummy would look like or something. They were very pale white and kind of glowing a little bit, but they would take me through the wall, and that would be the last of it. During the time, it was winter time, very cold outside, and I remember going through the wall face up and just looking up and seeing the stars and, you know, the black sky. And then that's when it would end. But every morning I would wake up with bruises, scratches, and these little marks. They looked like pin pricks, little teeny tiny dots, and they were red, almost like ink red. It was in the form of like a triangle, just several dots in a perfectly straight row, you know, made the form of a triangle. And it was on my arm. And every morning I'd wake up and my wife would pretty much say, "What the heck happened to you?" Like, she said, "It looks like somebody's just beat you half to death." And it did. It was terrible. So anyhow, that was pretty frightening. And you know, in my mind, I think whatever people are calling aliens or could very well be demons, because it's no coincidence these things are related and happened to me in the same 2-week period of time. The reason these things were able to come in my house and do this to me is because, and I really believe it with all my heart, is because I started harboring bad feelings toward that man at work. I mean, to the point of hating him. And, you know, as a Christian, I mean, it's a sin for me to hate somebody and to have feelings like that, you know. So I was dealing with that on top of everything else. And I was in fear for my baby, my child. And I said, man, if these things could come do this to me, what can it do to my child, you know? What put a stop to it? I remember one afternoon I came home from work and I was just more upset than I've ever been in my life with these things doing this to me. And I prayed and I prayed. I said, God, please help me. Please help me. And I remember when I pulled into my driveway, it felt like I got struck by lightning or just like a power. It just came over me and I felt pure joy, like just ecstatic feelings. I felt like I could just jump up and fly almost. Anyhow, I just walked straight in my house with tears just streaming down my face. And it was tears of joy. It was just sheer ecstasy. There's no other way to explain it. It was just a heavenly feeling, and I really felt and I knew in my heart that it was of God, you know. I remember going in my house and just speaking to those things and casting them out. You know, from that moment on, I've not had any more instances of, you know, any kind of paranormal anything. There's been a peace in my home, no more afraid when the lights go out or anything like that. And life's been pretty awesome ever since. Anyhow, guys, I pray for y'all. I pray blessings on you and pray that your show does well. I enjoy it. I never, ever watched or listened to shows like this until these things started happening to me. And the reason being that I was trying to find people that had similar experiences. And, you know, it just kind of started me on a journey to find out more about things like this, because I know just as the sky is blue that these things are real. And that there are things that go bump in the night, and these things can touch you, and, you know, I can see how they can ruin a person's life, you know. But anyhow, guys, I love your show, and I wish you all the best. Thanks. Bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Thank you so much, Steve, for calling in and giving us that terrifying story.
I mean, not cool.
Right? I mean, it's really creepy. Now that one in particular was not a hat man, but more of a shadow person. But they are very similar to me and the way they happen.
They're cousins. They got to be cousins, man. They got to be family.
Right. Very creepy. Now, remember, folks, if you have any scary stories like that that you'd like to share with me and Cam, even if you don't want it read on the air, you know, you can tell us not to read on the air. We would appreciate it. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call and leave a message like Steve did, 817-945-3828. But, Cam, what was you telling me about this lamp?
Well, I like to close with some good feelings and just kind of wrap everything up. So let's end on a good note. This is pretty cool. You know, we always talked about some places around the world aren't lucky about having electricity, especially nowadays. It's always about the children. The best thing to do is to have your children, educated. Educate your children about what's going on, you know. And a lot of places without the electricity, they can't read. They may be interested in learning to read. I mean, there's nothing better than knowing how to read. Most everyone takes it for granted. But when you don't, you know, you always see a child when he first learns or she first learns, they go crazy. I mean, it's just like sometimes they can't consume enough of it. Well, in a lot of these other countries, they don't have the luxury of electricity when you flip a switch on. And in any of this, well, this comes from sciencealert.com. This is Fiona McDonald actually wrote on this, but you're going to really, really enjoy this. Now, this is a UK-based team of engineers. They've came up with this device that they call Gravity Light, and it simply runs on the forces of gravity. Now, it's not like, you know, there's no electricity needed. There's no batteries needed. There's no solar power needed. I relate this a lot to the fact of you get these survival flashlights with a hand crank,
right,
where you crank them up and it charges and all that. Well, that's kind of the way this works. What it is it's a pretty simple thing. It works all like a bit of a pulley. Basically, what they say is you need to add 12 kilos, like we talked about, or what is it, 26.4 pounds, I believe, is you add to one end of this cord, and they say it can be a bag of sand, a rock, whatever you want to add this, however you want to add this weight. And then you lift that weight up and let it go. Because it's in that light, it has a retractor, so it retracts it in there. Then you let it go on that little pulley, and as it does, it slowly descends.
Right.
And as it slowly descends, that light comes on. And it's basically, it's all done off kinetic energy. Now, the kinetic energy, they say, that then powers a drive sprocket and a polymer gear train, and it lights up the little LED lights that are in it. And then, of course, it says once the weight hits the floor, of course, your light goes out, and you need to repeat the process. Here's the cool thing is,
so you
though.
You can crank this thing up and let it slowly drop.
Descends.
And it'll keep the lights on in your room for an hour?
20 to 30 minutes right now. But it also says, depending on how high you place the weight to start with. So I'm sure that there's a magic number where you can get, like we talked about, more rope, different area. You know, your light's down closer. The rope starts here, up here. As it slowly, I'm sure you can fine tune the weight to get it. But yeah. So for 5 seconds worth of you putting that rock or that weight back up there, it gives you 30 minutes worth of light as the gravity descends. Now, here's what they're doing. They're going to a crowdfunding, and it's for the second version of what they call the Gravity Light. Now, that's on Indiegogo, folks. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to raise money. They need roughly $199,000 in order to make what they want, their light brighter and longer lasting and easier to use. So this is just the start. They say the light itself right now is going to cost around $10 US, which is, of course, way cheaper than, you know, you think oil lamps. It's way cheaper than that. There's no carcinogens. There's no chance of fire. There's no anything like that. And it says also, too, in some of these countries that some families spend up to 30% of their income on just oil for lighting in those homes as
right.
well. So that comes from the Gravity Light people. So if you're interested in that, of course, you can go to the Indiegogo. You can just Google search Gravity Light if people want to help support that. But I've got something a little bit closer to home, folks. We got a good friend of ours, and we've talked about it before, and we always kind of, I know we're beating the dead horse, and we say, make sure to go to Phantoms and Monsters for Lon Strickler. Well, folks, Lon's got a GoFundMe page, and you can go to his website at Phantoms and Monsters, and you can check this out. Now, you can scroll down there a little ways. Now, it's phantomsandmonsters.com. You'll scroll down there a little ways. His wife is battling cancer right now.
That's right.
And they are running out of funds. They are, it's colon cancer. It's basically drained them. Lon got hurt years ago, so I think he's actually disabled is what Lon is. So everybody kind of has, and it's a little bit of anything, folks. They need to raise $12,000. They need $12,000. As of right now, he's got about $465. So, of course, Kyle and I are personally going to be donating. We're going to be sending some money. So if you can, if it's as little as $5 or as much as you want to send, please, let's help Lon out. Let's make sure let's help him get through all this. He does a great job with keeping Phantoms and Monsters going. We just want to make sure we pass on as much love as we can. So anytime you want to read some cool stories, make sure to go to Phantoms and Monsters. And like we said, if you can, get on there, go through the GoFundMe page, send Lon $5, $10, $100, whatever you can afford to send. If you don't want to send it all at one time, or if you can't, send him $10 this month, $10 next, you know, however we can get it going. Let's just make sure we got to help a brother out that's in this circle. We all want to take care of our own, so let's make sure we do that. So thank you so very much. One other thing, too, we always like to laugh about is Florida Man, folks. Florida Man's been at it again. Florida
what
Man.
What did you do this time?
This comes from the Palm Beach Post. Florida Man was sipping Bud Light, and he walks down the street in only shirt and shoes. Claims he lost his pants and his underwear at the beach. down there. So apparently a t-shirt and a beer is all you need down there in Florida. So Florida man was just relaxing, and that's what he's up to now. So folks, if you go to the beach, make sure to cover up your no-no square. All right. Whatever you do, don't let the buddy lights get to you too much.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for listening today. Like I said, if you have any stories you want to share, don't forget, go to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show. And one more thing I'd like to thank, the music for the show. The music for our show is provided by Pretty Lights. And we get emails constantly. People wanting to know where the music comes from and where they can find it. You can go to his website, prettylightsmusic.com. You can go to iTunes. You can go anywhere and get it. And Derek Smith, he's an incredible musician. And we're so glad that he's willing to let us use his music for the show. And also, if you're not a member of Expanded Perspectives Elite, the music on some of those shows, at least the intro, is provided by the Black Angels. They're a local band here in Texas, too, Austin area. And they're gracious enough to let us use one of their songs as our intro.
Yes.
You could buy their stuff, same thing, their website, or you can go to iTunes. Pretty cool stuff.
Well, and the thing I really love about Derek's work, first of all, folks, jump on YouTube. You can watch a documentary about Derek making one of his albums. It's amazing, where he got a bunch of artists together and sampled them playing live music down in New Orleans, I believe. And he goes through. The great thing about Derek is you can go to his website. If you want to download it for free, he lets you have some of his music. He asks for donations. If you want to support him, you go and you buy his albums. Go to his shows. He has awesome t-shirts and caps and things on the whole deal. He's just an all-around great guy. He is really a good-hearted soul to have out there making this kind of music. And I love all of that music. I mean, it's neat to hear the progression over the years of what he's done. But yeah, it's one of those things that I really do. I really appreciate it so much for him letting us do this.
All right, everybody, don't work too hard. For you elite members, we will talk to you on Thursday. Kim, what are you going to be talking about on Thursday?
I'll be throwing out a little ancient history. We're going to dig off into some old school stuff for this Thursday show.
Right on. I'm going to be talking about the plans on how to build a time machine. So get their pencils
ready. Well, we can go back then. We'll build it and then we'll go back.
Right. All right, everybody, have a good week.
Peace.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.